world of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Wednesday, the 4th of February, year of our Lord, 2026. Today we're going to take a look at the Trump regime caught in yet another attack on the Second Amendment. But in Washington State and New York, we have a so-called gun control law that is going to cast a much larger shadow of prohibition on a lot of things. So we're going to take a look at that. And in Epstein world, things are starting to come together. It's not just the espionage networks. It's also the financial networks and the connections that are inside of these documents that is really key. The connections to pandemics and how to profit from them, and the connection to the great taking and how to profit from taking everything from everybody. Folks, they have laid the foundation since the mid-1990s for this "you will own nothing." And, of course, we're not going to be happy about it. But they've been laying the foundation for that for a very, very long time. And Epstein's emails reveal a great deal about this, because this guy was at the very center of all this financial corruption. What a surprise. We'll be right back. Well, we're going to begin with some of the news updates here. Kind of interesting when you look at this great replacement thing that's out there. Of course, that was just a conspiracy theory, right? Yeah. Kind of like Jade Helm is just a conspiracy theory. Well, not actually. And we can see how it's rolling out. And on the left, you had an individual who was a Spanish politician who openly embraced all of this, saying, "I can't wait to replace this country of fascists and racists." That's in Spain. And who she want to replace them with? She said, "The immigrants, the radicalized people, please don't leave us alone with so many right-wingers." And of course, we do want them to vote. And of course, we have achieved papers, regularization already. We're going for the nationality to change the law so that they can vote. Of course, I hope, replacement theory. Hopefully, we can sweep right-wingers and racists of this country with immigrant people, with hard-working people. Of course, I want there to be a replacement. Replacement of right-wingers, replacement of racists, replacement of scoundrels. And we can do it with the working people of this country. And she gets a standing ovation. Whatever your skin color, right? All comrades, the working people of the world, unite, blah, blah, blah. Somebody said, "Let me fix that for you. This is what it looks like." They did an AI, and they replaced her and these people standing up, put them in burkas and whatever. I don't know what it is that the guys wear, the robes with the headdresses and all the rest of the stuff. But somebody said, "Let me fix this for you." That's what it's going to. You're going to replace all those right-wing nationalists with Muslims. That part of it's funny. The rest of it's not. But at least they're saying the quiet part out loud. They just granted amnesty to 500,000 illegal immigrants, and the government is now going to make them Spanish citizens and let them vote. And so the question is, what do we do about this? And of course, Steve Bannon is out there saying, "We're going to have ICE at all the polls," and so forth. when you look at what ICE is doing, what?
It seems like someone should point out that the country that has the most Spaniards that she hates is the one that she's living in. She could move to any other country, and she would be getting away from these horrible Spaniards that she despises so much.
Well, globally, she's just a communist. She hates anybody that doesn't put her in charge anywhere. But you know, when we look at this again, like Lance was saying, you're either team immigrant or your team tyranny. That seems to be our two choices. You know, do you want to go into this mass federalized police state of surveillance and digital ID nationalized, or do you want to be taken over by Muslims? It's like, I don't know. It is a distinction without a difference in a lot of ways. It's kind of like the choices that we have between Republicans and Democrats, isn't it? You know, it's a fake choice. It's like, I don't want either one of these worlds that they want.
Doubling the budget for the lure of the Somalis while also rolling out the tyrannical so-called solution that isn't going to do anything but get people accustomed to martial law.
That's right. And what Lance is referring to there is the fact that the refugee fund, which is what was used to bring in and to fund the Somalis before they started grifting everybody for the daycare stuff. Of course, they also get the other money as well. You know, they have the daycare frauds and other things like that, but they still get their refugee money. So that fund was $6 billion last year, and it's been that for a couple of years. The Trump administration, Republicans, wanted to bump that up by another $5 billion. So they want to take it up to $11 billion, 80% increase. While they are ringing the alarm bell about Somali refugees, they are funding the very mechanism that brought them in. Talk about a welfare magnet. Talk about fraud. That's what this truly is. And so Steve Bannon's approach is to ICE agents are working out so well for what people like Steve Bannon want, this Goldman Sachs former banker, friend of Epstein. Steve Bannon called him on a daily basis for a year before he died, well after he'd been a convicted pedophile and so forth, just before he got arrested. He's calling him on a daily basis. He's got all this these tapes that he had because he was going to help Jeffrey Epstein rehabilitate his image. Why isn't Steve Bannon getting hit for any of this stuff? This guy, this crook, he is a convict, folks. Steve Bannon is a crook and a convict. And who did he swindle? His own people. He swindled MAGA people. Said, we'll build the wall. And absconded with the money. He got convicted for that, went to jail. And, of course, his pal, fellow, who said there's no honor among thieves, Trump pardoned him. And so, you know, while we have this kind of thing happening here.
You need to back up. You need to back up. Stay safe.
Got armed agents with guns. What was this woman's crime? She was filming police who say they have no restraints. So they pull their guns, point the guns at her. Get out of the car. We're going to arrest this citizen for filming the police in public as they are filming everything we do. You want to live in a country like that? I don't. That's why I've made this front and center for the last several days. This is one of the worst things that can happen to this country, truly is. And so Bannon then says, they're exactly what we need at the elections, right?
You're damn right. We're going to have ICE surround the polls come November. We're not going to sit here and allow you to steal the country again. And you can whine and cry and throw your toys out of the pram all you want, but we will never
crook.
Again
You're
allow
a convict.
An election to
Liar,
be stolen.
Thief, crook. Steve Bannon, he ought to be banned. Look, he's nothing but a rebranding of what Obama did. Remember during the Obama, one of the Obama elections, they had some gang of black thugs and they show up with baseball bats and scare off anybody they think's not going to vote for their guy. That's what that is. That's exactly what that is. It's just a different group of thugs. These guys have got official badges, right? The other guy said, badges? We don't need no stinking badges, right? Straight out of Sierra Madre. She's advocating genocide of her own people. That's what Elon Musk said, and he's absolutely right about that. This is the goal of the left and the liberals who are ruling the EU. This is why they push through the migration pact. As many new citizens as possible imported from outside of Europe, that is their hope for additional votes in the elections and to maintain power. And that's not ultimately what they want. Ultimately, what they want is a civil war. So don't give that to them. That's what they want here in America as well. So a lot of people replied to that and said, you know, get them out of the Shenzhen, how you pronounce that? The Shenzhen area. That's the essentially the free trade zone. The no, you don't have to have a passport to go from country to country. That's one of the things that was really strange. When I was in high school, I went with a group, music group that was there. And you know, we went to, it was like, you know, one of these things like 9 countries in 10 days or something. You know, we were constantly traveling and going from place to place. And it was really strange because these countries are like the size of states in the United States. And of course, states originally were countries when we created the federal abomination that's in Washington, D.C. But, you know, you drive a little bit and you get to a border crossing. You have to show your passport and all the rest of this stuff. And that's what the Shenzhen zone got rid of. I thought it was really interesting because, you know, you go just a little ways, and it was a completely different culture, different language, different food, you name it, right? People even dress differently. And now that is all being homogenized into a global gray. They're talking about multiculturalism. What they've done is they've gotten rid of the multicultures. It's this kind of gray uniculture that is out there. Your Destiny 2026 says, let's not forget Bannon's other felon buddy, Miles Guo. His sentencing continues to get pushed back. That tells us something, doesn't it, as well? That's a guy who was part of the insider group of the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. He became a billionaire. We know how they become billionaires, right? It's crony capitalism, this kind of fascist economic. This is the model, by the way, of the Trump regime. You know, let's get a lot of people in. We have a controlling interest, and we profit from all these different countries. That's what Trump is doing with Intel and all these other, buying stock in these things, government ownership of them. That's very different than the bailouts that we've had in the past of like Chrysler and other things like that. And those were wrong. I never supported those. But now what Trump is doing, he's not just helping a business that he wants to succeed or a business that's failing or something like that as a backstop. They want to manage it. This is Chinese communist style. And it is this fascist economic merger between corporations and government. And it's also the corruption of crony capitalism. And that's how Guo got rich in China. Then he made some enemies for whatever reason, and he had to flee. And of course, Steve Bannon was arrested on his yacht when Steve Bannon was fleecing his own people. Why does he have an audience? I don't understand it. It's like, it's kind of like this sadomasochism thing, right? The worse that Trump and Bannon treat people, the more they love them. I saw what Trump and Alex Jones did to people over January the 6th, and they got bigger than ever. Same thing with Bannon. He rips people off on this wall thing, and he's bigger than ever. It's crazy. It really does say something about our country. I had a friend in the Libertarian Party says, yeah, you know, politics is really like sadomasochism. You know, tie me up and beat me, please. You know, it's people are always begging for that kind of stuff. But this is even worse than that. This is directly the people who have ripped them off, abused them, gotten them in legal trouble and so forth. And they follow them. They give them money. They listen to their worldview. It's just amazing to me what happens with it. Real Jason Barker, good to see you there. Knights of the Storm. He says, again, they say we don't need weapons of war, AR-15 on the streets, but they come out in full kit. Who are they at war with? Rhetorical question, of course, from Jason. We know exactly who they're at war with. It's with us. And they've been at war with us for quite some time. You know, the 2020 thing, the lockdown, I said, this is medical martial law for all practical purposes. The sanctions against Main Street and small mom and pop businesses, you're not essential. And that is the first act of war, always, sanctions. Guard Goldsmith, Liberty Conspiracy, says Minnesota is being targeted because Trump administration goons, it's not called an administration, it's called a regime. I said that yesterday. I refuse to call this guy president. He has defied and shredded the Constitution in every way, shape, and form that he has. He says there's no controlling legal authority. There's no, essentially like Gore, his actions say he hasn't had that exact quote yet. But they did say that about international law, for example, and he feels that way about domestic law as well. So if he has divorced himself from the Constitution like an ex-wife, he is no longer the president. You know, it's just like he's no longer the husband of wife number one or wife number two. Wife number one is dead now, but so you don't call him husband, and he's not a president anymore of this country. He's just Trump. And his quote-unquote administration is not administering anything. It is a regime that protects itself regardless of what the constraints of the law are. So it is a Trump regime, but with that caveat there, sorry, guard, his point is these goons in the Trump regime know that MAGA really hate the Somalis. Thus, the arbitrary focus on the welfare fraud, which they had ignored during Trump's first administration. I reported on it during Trump's first administration. They did nothing about it during his first administration. And they did nothing about it for most of the year this last year, as they were ramping up ICE and sending them through the streets, even in Minneapolis. They did nothing about it until you had the report. And then once it got, that went viral, then they focus on the Somalis, except they don't focus on the Somalis. Who do you see getting arrested and killed? Americans. Americans who are taking pictures of them. I don't know. I haven't seen any stats about how they're getting rid of the Somalis. And if they want to get rid of the fraud, you go out and start arresting people, like I've said so many times. Get the accountants and the lawyers and go after Walls and go after the other people who are part of this. The Americans as well as the Somalis who are part of this fraud. They're not interested in doing this. They want to have a conflict.
Yeah. And like you've been mentioning, the first thing you would do if you were serious about fixing the problem is get rid of the welfare lure. But they are doing the opposite of that. They're rapidly increasing the welfare
lure.
They double it. Importing a whole bunch more because Trump loves the Somalis. They are the perfect excuse.
Well, I think this extra...
The Somalis in America are like the positive COVID tests.
That's a good analogy, Lance. I like that. I think this extra money for the refugee program, they might be putting that in place for the Ukrainians, right? We're going to wind up, instead of, you think things are bad with the Somalis, wait till the Ukrainians come in. They have been perfecting the art of corruption for a very long time. Even Bill Gates said it's the most corrupt country on earth. And so you start bringing in the Ukrainian mobs and see what happens and hand them another $6 billion, right?
Yeah, of course, the difference is the COVID tests were fake, whereas this is a real problem that they're creating in order to create tyranny.
That's right. Well, let's take a look at this phony Trump regime and the fact that it's there to support the Second Amendment and the rights of people to protect themselves. This is something that it's amazing to me how anybody could think that about Trump based on his own just ramblings about revealing what he really thinks about the Second Amendment. Fortunately, I can do whatever I want. I can ban anything I want, and we can take the guns and do the due process later. Fortunately, I can ban any components that I want. And, of course, the Democrats were eager to grab that precedent from Trump. And now you've got Jeanine Pirro. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. I don't ever watch Fox News. She's attempting damage control because of her gun comments. And her gun comments are truly amazing. This shows you what you get from Fox News, and you spell that A-F-A-U-X, right? It's faux news, right? This is what you get from Fox News and what you get from the Trump administration. Totally phony. Phony conservatives, phony lawyers and attorneys. So she bragged about her office taking guns off the street in Washington, D.C., so that those guns cannot be used in homicides or assaults with deadly weapons or in any other kind of carjacking or any kind of robbery. This, folks, is exactly the kind of rhetoric that we see from Democrats all the time. We got to get those guns off the streets because crimes are being committed with them. You know, you can look at it from that perspective. It's kind of the gun, the glass half full or glass half empty. There are far more, except that it's not an even switch there. There are far more crimes that are stopped by people having guns, and the presence of guns deters crime. They know that. That's why they put armed guards everywhere. That's why they got armed guards with armored cars and things like that, right? Well, I tell you, you want to see an armored car guard, you go to China. We were there when we were in China for my daughter's adoption. The four of us, Lance, Travis, and Karen and I. By the way, today is Karen's birthday. So wish her a happy birthday. Hope she has a great day. Wish she could have taken it off, but we couldn't go anywhere anyway because of the snow. We're stuck. But anyway, we went to this area that was a shopping area, and it was like a crowd. The only time I'd ever seen a crowd like that before was once when I went up to New York, where Karen was from, and we went to the St. Patrick's Day parade in New York, and it was just wall-to-wall people. And the crowd starts going in one direction. Karen and I were there, and I got caught in one side of the crowd, and she was on the other side and got sheared off. We started separating. We just yelled to her, "I'll meet you over at such and such a place." You couldn't fight the crowd. It was amazing. And it was about that crowded in the shopping area in China. And this armored truck pulls up, and I can see through the window that a guy's holding a shotgun, right? And they open up the door, and he gets out, and he levels the shotgun at the crowd. He's pointing it at us. like he's Christy Noem or something. It was crazy. I said, let's get out of here just in case somebody tries something. He's going to shoot everybody here with that shotgun. So anyway, that's why you have armored guards and why you have armored cars, and hopefully they got better muzzle control. But the fact that you have firearms is a deterrence, right? That's why they use that there. And she doesn't realize that because she's a gun control liberal. Oh, she worked on Fox News. Oh, she's with Donald Trump. Well, that just proves it, doesn't it? So she says, you bring a gun into the district, you mark my words, you're going to go to jail. I don't, listen to this, I don't care if you have a license in another district. And I don't care if you're a law-abiding gun owner somewhere else. You bring a gun into this district, count on going to jail and hope you get your gun back. How about that? Yeah, you may be law-abiding and have a license and all the rest of this stuff, but I'm going to put you in jail and steal your gun. That's the Trump administration. I'm sorry, regime. Even I say it all the time. So yeah, she's gone native. She's now a district of criminals. Criminal. She's fits right in D.C., doesn't she? Tuesday morning, Pirro attempted to quell the outrage. She said, let me be clear. I'm a proud supporter of the Second Amendment. And but we have a law that requires handguns to be licensed in Washington, D.C. Okay. Well, they all say that, don't they? They all say, I'm a proud supporter of the Second Amendment. I've seen people like Chuck Schumer say that type of stuff. And then we have a law that requires handguns to be licensed. Hey, lady, your lawyer, that law is in violation of the Constitution. In violation of the Constitution. So much for her being a lawyer either. She tried again a few hours later with a video that was captioned, a message to my fellow gun owners, put your safety back on. And she pointed out that she is a proud supporter of the Second Amendment. She has spoken at the NRA convention. Some of my best friends are gun owners. How about that? How about that defense? That's the one we always hear. Well, you're still a Democrat gun grabber, in my book. So she said, I'm a proud supporter of the Second Amendment. In other words, Bo, from what she said, it just doesn't apply in my district. When I'm in charge, the Second Amendment doesn't apply. Lady, you took an oath to the Constitution. To start with, you're a liar. To start with. She says, there's a big difference here. You're responsible. You follow the laws. You're not going to have a problem with me, she said. But she just said, if you are a law-abiding citizen and you've even gone to the problem of getting a license, she's still going to take the gun away from you. And then she comes back and says exactly the opposite. I guess she figures we'll get the attention of a fruit fly. Well, that may be MAGA, but that's not you and I, right? We can see that when she says one thing one day and another thing the next day, we can see what's going on here. So as you come into my district, I don't care if you're a law-abiding citizen and you've got permits and you have gone through all the legal hoops that are unconstitutional to carry a gun. You come here, I'm going to put you in jail and take your gun. And then the next day she said, well, if you follow the law, you're not going to have a problem with me. If she followed the Constitution, she wouldn't have a problem with you as a gun owner. She doesn't follow the law. Let's understand who the criminal is here. The criminal is not the law-abiding citizen who's got a permit. The criminal is the person who swore to uphold the Constitution and is now threatening people as she's going to get rid of the Constitution. That's the Trump regime. That's Jeanine Pirro. Go back to Fox News. You were an embarrassment there anyway. So, she'd already said, I don't care if you're following the law. So I guess what we could say, we call District of Washington, D.C., we call it the District of Criminals. I guess we could call it Washington Defy Constitution. Maybe that's what D.C. stands for. I think that's a good description of everything they do. Washington Defy Constitution. That's what Washington, D.C. stands for. Well, the NRA wasn't happy being drawn into this association with her. They want to disassociate from her. So they came back and they said, we want a bill to allow people to legally carry a gun in D.C. I mean, there's been fights over this over and over again. The Heller case that went to the Supreme Court, that was over an off-duty police officer who was carrying a gun off-duty, and they came after him. So I guess a question for Pirro, Perrine, or whatever her name is, Jeanine Pirro, I guess the question for her is, what about a law-abiding police officer who wants to carry a gun in the District of Columbia, right? Or the people who defy the Constitution? What should be done about him? Do you agree with that Heller case decision in the Supreme Court? That was key because they said, no, it is an individual right. And it happened in that district of criminals that she's so happy about. They were defying the Constitution. They got slapped down by the Supreme Court on that. I mean, they didn't even want an off-duty cop to carry a gun. They don't care. They're going to take them out of people's hands. So all this stuff about, well, we want rapists and criminals and murderers and robbers and everything. We're going to take the guns away from them. They were taking them away from off-duty policemen. So, again, the NRA is pushing back against this because she tried to help herself associating with them. They kind of shoved her away. A Republican congressman, Greg Stubbe from Florida, said, I bring a gun into the district every week. He tweeted that at her. I have a license in Florida and D.C. to carry, and I will continue to carry to protect myself and others. Come and take it. Well, he ought to go and take her out of being a U.S. attorney. Why don't they impeach her if she's so adamantly opposed to the Constitution that she swore to as a condition of her office? So the NRA got into the mix the following morning, said your right to self-defense should not end simply because you crossed some state line or you crossed into Washington to defy the Constitution. Again, all jurisdictions, everybody who gets an office swears to uphold the Constitution. That happens pretty much, I think, at every state and local office. They swear to uphold the Constitution. So, but not her. And then you also had in this last week another U.S. Attorney's office, this one in L.A. So here's Jeanine Pirro in Washington District of Criminals. And then you have another person of her same rank in L.A., and he was the one who said, if you approach a law enforcement with a gun, there's a high likelihood that they'll be legally justified in shooting you. These are the kind of people that the Trump administration wants. Let's put to rest forever this mythology that Trump supports the Second Amendment in any way, shape, or form. Any support of the Second Amendment is purely coincidental, just like any support for the right to life is purely coincidental. As a matter of fact, Melania is bragging about the fact that she's pro-abortion.
Right, that you are staunchly for a woman's right to choose. You are pro-choice. You write, it is imperative to guarantee that women have autonomy in deciding their preference in having children based on their own convictions, free from intervention or pressure from government.
Planned Parenthood prostitute Melania.
About that before you wrote that in the book?
Yes, he knew my position and my beliefs since the day we met. I believe in individual freedom. I want to decide what I want to do with my body. I think
she sold it.
I don't want government in my personal business. I think it's
that is her business, selling her body.
As I said in the book, and it's very well explained in the chapter, what does really my body, my choice means?
It's not your body. Can you understand that? It's somebody else that you're killing. Different fingerprints, different DNA, half the time a different sex. Not your body. You're murdering a baby, lady. And of course, the Trump administration, after they cut funding to Planned Parenthood with Title X in March, they quietly restored it in December. And then the next day after people found out about that, about a month later, took a while because it was so quietly done, after they found out about it, the pro-life organizations have invited J.D. Vance to speak because Trump is so pro-life, isn't he? Yeah, the pedophile. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Maybe his version of birth control is finding girls that are prepubescent, right? Anyway, it's no surprise that conservatives have rediscovered their love of federal power, says Mises. And that's exactly what's going on. especially this fantasy that if you're on Team Trump, you somehow now are part of the decisions and you have the power and nothing is ever going to change. He says it's not surprising, but nevertheless, it's been remarkable how quickly American conservatives, and I think we need to make a distinction here. You know, we had people in the past who were pro-war conservatives and violated some of the fundamental tenets of that had been historical conservatism. Basically, America first, mind our own business, and you know, peace and trade with everybody else, but foreign entanglements with no one. And so that type of conservative started being replaced during the Reagan administration with people like Gene Kirkpatrick, a Democrat that he put in. They were very much, you know, about getting involved in foreign wars and things like that. So he came up with the term neocon. Well, these people are actually worse than that. They're MAGA cons, I guess. Or you could call them Trump cons or whatever. So he said, American conservatives have been convinced to ignore or to make excuses for virtually everything this regime does so long as Trump is in the White House. This includes runaway deficit spending, inflationary monetary policy, foreign wars, disregard of federalism, that is every imaginable attack on the 10th Amendment you can think of, and even higher taxes. Policies that would have been denounced by conservatives under Obama or Biden are reframed as virtuous under the current administration. Decentralization and local control used to be what they supported, but now they are the champions of the use of federal police and federal troops in any city where the local government runs afoul of the regime's agenda. Calls for more aggressive federal power have essentially are especially loud on the matter of immigration. But conservatives have also called for the regime to ignore limits on the use of federal troops and domestic law enforcement overall. Conservatives have cheered the new federal powers to override state regulation of AI, and they're now calling for nationalization of all election law. And, of course, they want to nationalize the election law, and Steve Bannon, rather than seeing a problem with masked, armored, body armor, and again, wearing this absurd camouflage, that's not camouflage if you're walking around on snowy streets in Minneapolis. It's not camouflage in any urban environment, but especially when everything else is white and you're out there in your jungle camouflage. What a bunch of fools they are. It's absolutely amazing. But the masks and the attacks on people who film them, I think, are the key issue. Bannon doesn't see a problem with that. The convict, Steve Bannon, wants to extend that to every aspect of life. And the people who listen to him, he's misleading you yet again, right? He misled the people who listened to him, defrauded them. He wants to defraud us all of our freedom and our liberty and our Constitution. That's what this guy is really about. There's no reason to be surprised or scandalized by the total lack of commitment to any ideological standards, nor is there any reason to expect anything better. And I would say, well, this is an article by, I think it's Ryan Macon, I think, that wrote this article. I'm not sure. At the Mises Institute.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I always thought that about the Tea Party, for example. As I said, there was absolutely no ideological core there. It's just this empty, hollow thing. I don't like it. We're taxed enough already. It had no more of a philosophical or a practical understanding of what was happening with taxes and spending than that guy in New York, that black guy who kept running for mayor of New York. He said, the rent's too damn high. And that was the slogan. He just kept shouting that. And it's like, well, you have no idea what the dynamics are about this or what to do about it. You don't offer a solution. Just complain about the fact that it's too high. So y'all, this Tea Party, taxed enough already. What do they want to do? They want to cut government back? Well, there wasn't any clear agenda for that. Are you going to cut the spending? If you don't cut the spending, what are you going to do? Just increase the deficit? Yeah, that's what they wanted to do. So the current conservative fondness for deficit spending, easy money, regime change wars, untrammeled federal police power, and higher taxes, it never changes substantially. And so that includes things like the central bank's monetary powers and other things like that. The lack of any true division in the ruling elite's policy agenda can be seen in how the policy responds to emergencies, alleged military threats, pandemics, financial crises, is always essentially the same, regardless of which party is in power. So with every emergency, we witness an increase in federal pressure on the media, vast new amounts of federal spending, new innovations in expansive monetary policy, and more focus on surveillance. The rank-and-file supporters of Trump now rather fancifully believe that they are in power, that their preferred policies will be implemented, and that these policies will somehow make a lasting change. Well, you think they're on your side. You might want to look at some of the other really kind of wedge and emotional issues, you know, gun ownership and protecting the right to life. These are core things. I say wedge issues or fundamental issues because they're not about money, for example, or wars or things like that. But these are kind of personal issues, and you think that they're on your side. They're not. As a matter of fact, when you look at the second-class status of gun regulation, and this is something that is both Republican and Democrat. We have a court case right now before the Supreme Court about what is happening in Hawaii. Hawaii has come up with, because they said you have a right, an individual right to protect yourself, with Heller, and then also with Bruin. Because of that, Hawaii and some other jurisdictions have said, no, if you want to carry it on private property, you have to get the express permission of the private property owner before you carry it. And that's how they have turned everything upside down. Rather than saying, well, it's private property. If somebody doesn't want you carrying a gun, they can put a notice up and say, don't come on here. Instead, by saying it's prohibited on all private property, unless expressly permitted. You see how they've turned everything upside down and inside out. But of course, they have done that with everything. Pretty much everything is prohibited by the federal government or the Democrats, or they want to make it that way, unless expressly permitted. So this is just another example of this. And what it does is it sets up all kinds of legal traps so that the gun control people in Hawaii, kind of like Jeanine Pirot in the District of Criminals, those people can say, if you're on private property, do you have a note from them allowing you to carry this on their property? I mean, they might be fine with it if you asked them. But since you didn't ask them, we're going to prosecute you. So that's what's being adjudicated in the Supreme Court right now, that by default, you don't get to carry a gun. And they've set up these kind of legal entrapments for people. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and that is yet another strategy to disarm people, except this time it's kind of a twist. Usually it is the target is the Second Amendment. In this particular case, they're using the Second Amendment, I believe, as cover for something that is much, much larger in terms of prohibition. And they're doing it in an area, of course, where everybody hates the Second Amendment, as in Washington State. It's another one in New York. But it's something that's going to be very, very far-reaching. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to be right back. Stay with us.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
Well, here's the lead. I don't want to bury the lead too far. What I've been talking about is a 3D printer bill that's coming out of Washington State and another one out of New York. Now, of course, they have created this boogeyman called ghost guns out there. Sounds scary, doesn't it? Yeah, they're going. It's just like assault rifles. Don't talk to me about assault rifles when you got masked federal police sticking guns in everybody's face. I mean, it's crazy. Just like Kristi Noem, except these guys are doing it intentionally. She didn't know what she was doing. But this is in Washington State, and this is something that really it's hard to find any information much on it. Lance is the one who found this because he's very much involved in 3D printing. And following that, of course, we're also interested in guns as well. But it was actually through the 3D printing side that he found out about it. And a lot of people in 3D printing community have just dismissed this out of hand, saying, well, I don't care about guns. Fine, stop the ghost guns. Those things are scary anyway. Don't talk to me about ghosts. gun busters, right?
Most people in the 3D printing community are against it, but I'm seeing a lot of people that don't really appreciate just how bad this is. Mm-hmm. I'll get into more of the stuff they're missing later as you describe this.
Yeah, a guy who goes into this a great deal on YouTube is, what's his name, Legal Moses, I think?
Loyal Moses was Loyal the Moses. Channel that I yeah. saw, did a very in-depth coverage of this.
Legal Moses. But anyway, he's explained to a lot of these people who came back to him and said, well, I don't really care. You know, do ban him. I want to see him banned. And he says, you don't understand how this is going to impact you. And in a really ham-fisted way, it's going to pretty much make it impossible for people to do 3D printing. If it is possible, it's going to radically raise the price of 3D printers. And people are using them for a lot of different things. You can use them for fun, but you got a lot of farmers who are using them to print parts and things like that, replacement parts. But of course, this all gets back into the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, where people like corporations like John Deere don't want you doing any repairs on your stuff. They want to maintain the fiction that even after you buy the tractor from them, they own it for life and you're not supposed to do anything with it.
Difference is the John Deere stuff is coming from the John Deere company. This mm-hmm. would be legal mandates saying that you have to, as a manufacturer, put in restrictions to prevent the end user from modifying or repairing their own equipment. This is for more than just 3D printers. It specifically mentions CNC machines, and it's any type of device that can receive information from a computer to create an object in real life. So that includes CNC machines, laser cutters, a whole bunch of other devices.
That's right. Yeah, anything like that. And so it follows, like Lance said, it follows a very familiar pattern, doesn't it? You know, when you look at speech prohibitions, the government was always saying, we're not banning any. There's a law against censorship, but we're not censoring people. It's the social media companies. It's YouTube that's censoring people, right? We don't have anything to do with that. And then we find out, of course, we knew behind the lines that they were dropping hints, and sometimes it wasn't even a hint. Sometimes it was like, do this, you know, get rid of this person. And this is the type of thing. There's a long history of the government doing this kind of tactic. There's two kind of tactics that are very sneaky and very just evil tactics that the government has used for the longest time. One of them I talk about with the pandemic, the bribe and blackmail tactic. You like doing business with the federal government? Well, we're going to cut that business off if you don't mandate vaccines for all your employees, that type of thing. Or to the state, you know, you like to have that money for your sports, well, you better put the boys in the girls' bathroom or whatever. So they've used that type of thing all along, and they've done that very explicitly with a lot of these policies from the federal government. But when it comes to corporations, they've done things like that for censorship. They want the social media companies or YouTube or whatever to censor certain topics and to censor and ban the people who talk about those topics. And so they apply pressure to them, and the pressure is sometimes behind closed doors, sometimes it's implicit, but it is still coming from the government. We've seen the documents now that Elon Musk released some of those. And so this is the same type of thing. They're going to go after the 3D printer machines by 3D printing of guns, by going after the machine manufacturers and saying, if you don't put in the kinds of things that we're demanding in order to police this, then we're going to hit you with a $75,000 fine. It's a felony. You're going to go to jail. All kinds of very stiff penalties that are there. And so the harebrained scheme that they've come up with, which is really not going to work. And in a sense, there is a great deal of parallel between this and the social media censorship that we saw happening, because this is a First Amendment right to have these plans and to send them around. That has been tested by Cody Wilson all the way up to, I think, the Supreme Court. And they upheld the fact that the government could not demand that these files be taken down that show you how to manufacture gun parts, for example, or anything else. It's a First Amendment right, not just a Second Amendment. And so what they're doing is they're coming after a First Amendment right that's been upheld by the Supreme Court as well. Yeah.
And this specifically goes against that. It makes owning the files a crime. If you have on your hard drive files that could be used to print a firearm or firearm accessory, even if it's an incomplete file, but if it has enough of the similarities, and they have a new type of technology that looks at G-code and can reconstruct what the object it would make would look like. So it's not a matter of just change a few lines and now the checksum doesn't match and you can print it. It will see if it's, say, 80% similar to a banned item. And if that's the case, this law adds a rebuttal presumption, is the legal term, which is the opposite of presumed innocence. Presumed guilt. A rebuttal presumption is something that is assumed to be true by the court unless proven otherwise. So you have a rebuttal presumption that you were planning on making and distributing that firearm. So you would be given the penalty of someone that made a firearm illegally on this bill if you just own those files. Even if someone just sent it to an email address that you own and you didn't know that, you now have those files on your hard drive. You are now in possession of digital contraband.
Yeah, just like if you got kiddie porn on your computer or kiddie porn in your email stuff, right? And, of course, a rebuttal assumption. That's a nice piece of legalese to hide the fact that you're guilty until proven innocent. And that's another thing that we've seen from these people all along. And really, this whole idea that the government is limited in terms of things that it can do, in terms of searches, in terms of censorship and things like that, but they can get a private corporation to do it. That goes back to the middle of the 20th century with the creation of CIA and NSA and these other creeps and criminals. That was what they were doing with AT&T, the phone company. Said, well, you have the phone numbers of these people. That's your private. That's owned by AT&T. So if you want to give us all of their phone records and tell us everybody that's called them and everybody that they've called and when they did it, that's up to you. You can turn that over. We don't need to have a search warrant. You can just voluntarily turn it over to us. And you'd like to do that, wouldn't you? Because don't you like that monopoly that we've given AT&T for phones at the time? That's the way this whole thing works. It started with AT&T. That's why, by the way, they had the Church Committee hearings in the Senate to look at the CIA, and why they had the Pike Committee hearings in the House to look at the NSA. It was because of that. And the outcome of it was the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act saying, got to get a warrant. Well, this is stuff we can't tell people about it, so it's got to be secret. So we got to create this new structure over here, this Star Chamber Court, the FISA Court. We're going to have one judge, and he'll say, yes, you can listen to everybody on Verizon. How about that? And basically come up with a general warrant, essentially. And so that's how we got here. I mean, it's all come post-World War II. All a part of the national security state, and it just keeps metastasizing. But they keep using the same tactic because it's worked for so long. It's worked since the 1950s to say, well, if this corporation has got the data, they can turn it over to us. The idea that you are guilty until you're proven innocent, I mean, they have taken that on steroids through the war on drugs. And so now with this, just having these files in your on your computer or your email account, it's like having kiddie porn, and they'll come after you. And so it's going to add a great deal of expense and technical complexity to the 3D printers, because they're going to have to go in and reference every time you want to try to print something. They've got to go reference a file and make sure that this isn't something that is prohibited by the government to print. Isn't that amazing? And of course,
absolutely. Any device that receives information from a computer, and like I said, the bill specifically mentions CNC machines as well as 3D printers, mm-hmm. but it covers much more than just 3D printers and CNC machines. Mm-hmm. And all of them would have to first, whenever you give it anything to make, would first have to check the files against the blacklist to make sure that you have the permission from the government to make what you want to make.
Yeah. You will make nothing and you'll be happy. This is, we're going to such dark tyranny anymore. It's just amazing, isn't it? We got to somehow get control of this, but it just keeps getting worse all the time. So manufacturers must attest under penalty of perjury to the state attorney general there in Washington that their printers meet these standards. And so if there's a bug in it somewhere, okay, well, now we're going to come after you for perjury.
And that thing of attest that their printers meet these regulations, that also means that they can't let the end user modify or flash their own hardware, software stuff to it. It's got to be heavily locked down like a John Deere tractor, as we mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be nice if you had to have the CEOs of big pharmaceutical companies, what if they had to testify under penalty of perjury that they had tested their products for safety or even efficacy, right? Wouldn't that be a nice thing? We don't care about that. We just want to make sure that you don't have any guns that you could use to protect yourself against the federalized police like ICE or something like that, as they're ramping that up. The Attorney General will establish rules and maintain a database of firearm blueprint files to support detection. And that's the other issue that some of the people who are thinking about this broadly understand, that that means that they can prohibit anything, right? You like to print your Star Wars Stormtrooper to set on your desk with a 3D printer? Well, Disney might have something to say about that. They'll get that put into the files or whatever. It doesn't end. It extends to everything. So it can escalate up to a Class C felony for corporations, penalties up to 5 years in prison, fines up to $15,000. And so this is something that New York is doing something similar to this. This bill in Washington State, I think, is up for a vote today. Is that correct, Lance?
I believe so. I'd have to check.
So if you have any, if you're in Washington State, get on the phone today to your state representatives and talk to them about this. But and, you know, I do have people listen to me in Washington State. It's kind of funny. When I've gone to heavily Democrat areas, leftist areas like Washington State, that's been the places where I've been recognized the most. I was really surprised once about that. But anyway, the bill has sparked significant debate, supporters citing public safety and the risk of untraceable ghost guns, while critics argue that it may stifle innovation, infringe on digital rights, and impact legitimate industries like aerospace and manufacturing. Okay, now that's kind of an interesting another aspect of this that Lance and I have talked about. Aerospace. What do you think they're talking about there? They couldn't be talking about printing drones like they do in Ukraine, could they, Lance? You think that might be it?
Yep.
Because those are going to be a lot more effective weapons in an asymmetric war against the government than firearms are going to be. We can see that already in Ukraine. And so they don't want you manufacturing drones or any drone parts like that either. So there's a lot of different aspects to this.
I think it really ties in with the whole networked resistance thing, the net war thing that we covered on Monday,
yeah.
Where if you had a whole population of citizens with 3D printers, 3D printed drones that are kamikaze drones are going to be the future of warfare. That mm-hmm. is the future of asymmetric warfare and guerrilla warfare. That is actually as important, if not more important, than being able to print guns when it comes to resisting a tyrannical government.
That's right. Absolutely right. And so here we are again. They are shutting this thing down. And guess what is happening? At the state level, That's why it is so important to get involved at the state level, not at the federal level. You know, you've had Trump has tried to shut down the 10th Amendment multiple ways. You know, one of them, of course, the so-called Genesis Act, where they want to pave the way for artificial intelligence. You might as well call it the Genesis 6 Act. But, yeah, no state laws that are going to do anything to inhibit our artificial intelligence rollout. But on the state and local level, that's really where the rubber meets the road. And so if you're in Washington State, you need to be involved with this. The vote is coming up today, I believe. And, of course, this I don't know what the schedule is for the similar bill in New York, but that's where this all is right now. Let's take a couple of comments here. We got Angelo, 1999. Can't stand her years ago. Talking about Jeanine Pirot, I guess. She said, I'm a judge. I decided who owns a gun. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, she's a Democrat, folks. Yeah, she may be on Fox News. She may have an R behind her name, but she's a Democrat, as evidenced by her position on guns and her position in the Trump regime. Angelo, 1999, says, no, she'll probably be okay with the MAGAtards. They'll support anything the dictator proclaims. Yeah. And ON61 points out that her husband served 17 months in federal prison for 34 counts of conspiracy and tax evasion. And he got a full pardon from Trump. That's right. Just before he left. So there you go. You know, that's these criminals all hang together. Again, the District of Criminals and Washington, D.C. defy the Constitution. The Syrian girl, since that quote-unquote law Jeanine Pirot boasts about is in defiance of the U.S. Constitution, it is at best color of law, and it has no real legal standing. That's right. It's people like Jeanine Pirot who have basically subverted the Constitution and that whole notion that even if something is in direct defiance of what is explicitly stated in the Constitution, I don't care. I've got a law here. I just gave myself the authority to override the Constitution that I swore to uphold as a condition of my office. And I think the way to, I keep hammering this because I think people need to understand, in America, we didn't want kings, right? And so what the people who fought the revolution in 1776, one of their slogans was, no king but Jesus. And the other one that they said was lex rex, which is Latin for the law is king. And that was supposed to be what happened. And so when these people take an oath to the Constitution, what they're doing is they're saying, well, I'm going to be temporarily in this office. I'm not a king. I am a steward. The real king is the Constitution. It's kind of like, you know, Lord of the Rings. You got the stewards of Gondor who thought that they were the king, but they weren't the real king. I wonder if we're going to have a return of the king at some point. We ever get the Constitution back. I don't know. Real Jason Barker, the word permit is short for permission. I don't need permission. It's very clearly outlined as a protected right. You're absolutely right. Knights of the Storm, Jason. Trump Burger says, I find it crazy that we are only 1 year into Trump's term. So much insanity packed into such a short time. Well, he is the agent of chaos. And they have to accelerate this because they're running close up to the deadline they've got as part of this fourth turning. By 2030, they want to have their new society in place. And so, again, they've got to accelerate everything. You know, the fourth turning is that's right about the times of fourth turning. The guys who came up with that theory said, yeah, I think it'll kick off sometime in the mid-2000s of the global economic crisis, and it'll end probably around 2029, and the globalists say, 2030, that's when we have our new society. It's funny how that all aligns. And so they've got to have Trump in there to accelerate the Great Reset. Real Jason Barker says, by the law, even if you carry on private property where it's posted not to, the most they can do is ask you to leave and charge with trespassing if you refuse. But in Hawaii, they are pushing it further than that. That's why it's in the Supreme Court right now. He also says ghost gun is a broad term. Legally made, purchased, and sold gun can be considered a ghost gun if they don't know who currently owns it. And, of course, that is one of the aspects of this Washington law we didn't mention. They said, well, if you're a federal firearms licensee or whatever, there's going to be some exception to that. And I didn't really pay attention to much of it because the broad brush of what is going on here is the real key. So he says they'll use the 3D printing thing to creep in and push universal background checks for regular guns. Yeah, you wind up having a background check to own a 3D printer, right? I guess, who knows? Bob of Atlanta says, so basically anything you design to print will have to be signed off on by some authority. That's right. And as
other people have pointed out, right now it's exclusively about guns, but once they have a registry of banned files, they can add any copyright stuff. If a company like Nintendo or Disney starts saying, oh, you can't print that little Pokemon figure or Mickey Mouse figure because we own the rights to that, it can now search using this algorithm to see if you've got something that's 80% similar to a Pikachu, like we saw with Nintendo doing with Pal World, where they had some 3D models that were similar to some Pokemon models slightly. So they're, you know, suing them, trying to get them shut out of business. You would see the same thing against individual citizens that are trying to print any copyrighted stuff. You have to pay the royalties to them before you can print that. Is not part of this yet, but that's where it's going.
Yeah, just think of it as manufacturing prohibition, right? Because that's where this is really going. And they can prohibit you from manufacturing anything that they wish to prohibit you from manufacturing.
And
that's the key issue.
The bill is very vague about what they can ban. It's stuff that's partial components to guns. So that could include things like airsoft. Picatinny rails and stuff are the same as the ones that you would put on actual guns, foregrips, accessories.
Any kind of attachment. So this is like bump stock prohibition on steroids, right?
Yeah. And because it just has to be similar to a real gun, even movie props often have the same dimensions as a real gun. So that could trigger the algorithm to say you're now a felon because you tried to print that blaster from the latest sci-fi show.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's amazing. Real Jason Barker says they're also going after the file hosting places and the creators of the 3D print files. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, there's a lawsuit going on with that. It's not part of the government pushing this out with regulation, but there is a major manufacturer, Bamboo Labs, that is trying to really restrict the distribution of 3D printed files.
And I don't know how that falls into the Supreme Court decision about the legality of having these files. Again, this is, like you said, it's a lawsuit as opposed to a law that is coming from some agency. So I guess that's where the difference is with that.
And Bamboo Labs is a very good quality printers, but I would say avoid them, boycott them after how they seem to be going with all this stuff.
Yeah, so they are the ones who are actually trying to shut down the hosting of 3D print files.
Huh? Well, they have a...
Seems like that would be going against their whole business model. I mean, you want to have as many types of things out there for people to print, so people would buy your printer to print them.
Well, it's they have their own proprietary market of 3D print files, a bunch of free stuff and a bunch of paid stuff. They had a big promotion where they were paying creators to make it so that they only host on their website. So they signed a thing like, you own the rights to this, but don't post it on Thingiverse or other competitors to us. But then Thingiverse and these other competitors then downloaded a whole bunch of files and repost them on their own platforms. So that's kind of morally gray. If the files were already, you know, Apache, then it's not the creators that are posting.
If they were already
there,
out there, kind of free, then, you know, so it's okay.
Yeah, if it's open source, it's kind of odd, because a big part of this is that people have always, you know, downloaded these files, tweaked it slightly. There's been a long-running tradition of, here's my version of so-and-so's thing,
yeah,
right? Change this.
Yeah,
it's all open
it,
source, all community-driven, and this is really trying to shut that down, because if you download something that they agreed to only upload to their platform and you change it slightly and then upload it to a different platform, have you broken their laws or their restrictions?
Hmm. So Bamboo Labs is trying to do some kind of a bamboo under the fingernails torture for the over the people who buy their stuff. Trump Burger says, sure, they're scared of ghost guns, but wait until they find out you can get a full auto 30 cal air gun sent to your door with no paperwork. Yeah, that's a key thing. There's been a lot of videos that I've seen on YouTube talking about how powerful these air guns have become, and that in almost every jurisdiction, you just order it off of Amazon, or maybe hopefully a better supplier of a product or something like that, and have it shipped directly to your door. No, this is a major loophole, because these things, many of them are so powerful, they are lethal. They're used, many of them are being used for big game hunting. I mean, if you can take down an elk, you can take down a human, right?
That's, yeah, I was looking at Hatsan Velox handgun. That's a pre-charged pneumatic air gun, and it's as powerful as a .22, and it's quiet, and it's a handgun, and you can order it. There's no restrictions on it.
It comes almost with a built-in suppressor, right? Because there's no explosion they're going on there. And that's one of the key things about them that you can do. They've got some replicas of a lot of different handguns, so you can do practice with them, and because the ammunition has gotten so expensive. So that's something everybody ought to be aware of. If you're in the firearms, you can have some way to practice with the firearms and not have to waste ammunition. We're going to take another quick break, folks, and we will be right back. Stay with us.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Yeah, welcome back, and appreciate you bringing that to my attention, Lance. And of course, Jason Barker's been talking about this for a long time, because it touches on things that he's interested in as well, 3D printing and firearms and that type of thing. Real Octospook says, now that 3D printing and CNC is being made criminal, these are as evil as weapons. Yeah, that's right. You know what? Maybe what they should do, Lance, is maybe they should have in Washington State, they should require all of the banned files to have the word Epstein and Trump in there somewhere, and the Department of Justice would make it all disappear. Problem solved. You just put Trump and Epstein together in those files, and they're now instantly, they disappear. They'll go straight to Pam Bondi's desk. Radis Bro, thank you for the tip. Says, old documentary called Print the Legend goes over how all this started, and none other than Chuck Schumer was heavily involved in the 3D printing industrial industry. I have not heard of that documentary. I didn't know Chucky Schumer got involved in that. Well, anyway, I guess he's looking at this thing and saying, yeah, this is an opportunity for us to go after ghost guns. But the Pentagon is looking for killer AI and doesn't want to have any safeguards. You know, we've been talking about this for a long time. It was probably about 12, 13 years ago, I talked to Dr. Noel Sharkey, who at the time was raising the alarm about where we're going. He said, we're going to have autonomous killer robots and killer drones. They're going to give them the ability to shoot without the without any human intervention. And I've also talked to, I forget the guy's name. His book was The Four Battlegrounds. And he was talking about the efforts of the Pentagon to integrate artificial intelligence into war. And he said, of course, it's going to naturally evolve towards getting humans out of the loop, because if you keep humans in the loop, that's going to slow it down enough that the other guy wins. So you got War Pete there, and the only thing he can talk about, he just keeps coming back to lethality, lethality, lethality. How can we kill more people? This is going to do it for you. I think this is, we look at this, the ability to have these unrestrained autonomous killer robots. That is a recipe for weapons of mass destruction, a new kind that we've not seen, and very, very dangerous. And of course, it does give them a prepackaged alibi, a plausible deniability. Well, it was a computer bug that killed everybody in that village or whatever. So War Pete, a Christian nationalist, vowed not to use artificial intelligence models that, quote, won't allow you to fight wars. And so there is a bit of a battle that is shaped up with some of these AI manufacturers. So you've got Google, and you've got Musk, and you've got Anthropic that's out there. The only one that has a problem with autonomous killing machines is Anthropic, interestingly enough. Sources familiar with the dispute between War Pete and Anthropic say the battle is over safeguards that would allegedly prevent the government from deploying its technology to target weapons anonymously and to conduct U.S. domestic surveillance. And so you have the guy who is the CEO of Anthropic, who at least on this issue appears to be on our side. He warned that AI should support national defense, quote, in all ways except those which would make us more like our autocratic adversaries. Well put. We don't want to become the monsters that we fight. And he's saying if you use it for domestic surveillance, if you use it to have autonomous killing machines, how are we different from the people we're fighting? And that's true. It makes us really the evil ones out there. He's been very critical of what ICE is doing in terms of their tactics as well. The extrajudicial killings. He said the fatal shootings of U.S. citizens protesting immigration enforcement actions in Minneapolis were a horror. That's right, folks, because remember what we always said about January the 6th. You have an explicit constitutional protection against protest, right? And the very fact that you've got, like that clip that I showed earlier, where you got somebody who's sitting in a car, this car is off to the side, and when you see what they're doing here, this car is off to the side, and they run over, stop whatever they're doing, and they run over, point guns at the person in there, and get them out of the car, both of them, right? Now, you're impeding an investigation. Why? Well, because we have to stop what we're doing, come over and point guns at you or maybe kill you because you're recording us. Don't you see we're wearing masks and we don't want to be recorded? We have to stop our investigation. They don't do any investigation. They don't know who they're after at all. But we got to stop what we're doing to stop you from filming us. That's how you're impeding us, right? Anyway, an Anthropic spokesperson said the government and the company's AI said remains in productive discussions with the Department of War about ways to continue that work. But the Pentagon doesn't comment on the rift. Anthropic is one of the few major AI developers that has been awarded contracts by the Pentagon. The others were Google with Alphabet and Musk's XAI and OpenAI. Well, those guys are not going to have any problem at all with the government using it for surveillance and autonomous killing machines. I'm surprised that anybody does in that crowd, but at least one company does. That's good, but not enough. Meanwhile, the Trump department that is responsible for airline safety, supposedly, is going to use AI to write new regulations so that they can be churned out as fast as possible. Yeah, we're going to... Hey,
that's the big problem, is how long it takes the government to put new laws on us.
Yeah, I've talked about for decades, you know, how big the Federal Registry is. We even had a situation in one event that we filmed for a political candidate that was out there. He wanted to feed the IRS code into a wood chipper. And nobody at the IRS could even tell him how many pages that would be equivalent to. And so he got a best guess estimate of it. And he put several reams of paper together and fed them into the wood chipper. And it created this massive thing of confetti. It was pretty good visual. But, you know, they don't even know how many regulations are out there. And that's what I've said about the federal government and the regulations for the longest time. A law that is sufficiently complex is the same as having no law at all. It puts the bureaucrats in charge. They can be arbitrary in terms of how they enforce these things. That's a problem with the IRS. It's a problem with many agencies now. And whoever thought that the problem was that we didn't have enough rules and regulations? Well, this is according to a new investigation by ProPublica. A top transportation agency has tapped Google Gemini to help write new regulations affecting aviation, cars, railroad, and maritime safety. In internal communications from DOT attorney Daniel Cohen, agency staffers were presented with a plan along with a demonstration of AI's potential to revolutionize the way that we draft rulemaking. Now, I've said this all along. The intention going back to DOGE was to get rid of human bureaucrats in all these different areas and replace them with AI. And this is what it looks like. He says, we don't need the perfect rule on XYZ. We don't even need a very good rule on XYZ. We just need rules for people to obey, right? Doesn't have to be perfect, doesn't have to be good. So he said, according to a recent meeting and notes that were obtained by ProPublica, we want good enough because we're going to flood the zone. Flood it with what? With regulations. This is the tyranny of the bureaucracy. Said for the longest time, Congress doesn't write laws anymore. What they do is they create agendas, they create agencies, and then they kick it over to them to fill in the blanks, right? Remember, we've said that a lot. And when Nancy Pelosi said, well, we have to pass it to find out what's in it, said that about Obamacare, I think it was. But it applies to everything that they do because they don't follow up with the details. And so now Congress doesn't want to talk about the details where the devil lies in terms of any of these agendas. They just create these things and kick it over to an agency that already exists, or they create a new agency and they say, you fill in all the stuff. And so our laws and regulations are not being written by humans already. They're being written by bureaucrats. And so now they're going to replace those human bureaucrats with AI. It gets even worse. So now Congress has abdicated their responsibility, and now the human bureaucrats are abdicating their responsibility even. How bad is it going to get? Because we don't really care whether it's perfect. We don't even care if it's good. We just need to flood everybody with regulations. That's their goal. I mean, and the worst thing about this, as I pointed out, how do we get to the situation where you've got civil asset forfeiture? Why do they call it civil asset forfeiture? Well, they're not calling it criminal law because in criminal law, you have some procedures that are outlined there in the Constitution and they don't want to directly go up against it. So they find a devious workaround, just like we were talking about before when they do censorship. They say, well, this is not a law because it wasn't passed by Congress. This is a rule that came from the bureaucracy. And because it's a rule, you don't have any protection like you would a law. You see how they prevaricate around those things? You and I don't see any difference between a rule or a law. Both of them can get you a fine if you violate them. Both of them can send you to jail. But they make this artificial distinction between a rule and a law and then say, well, because it's a rule and not a law, you don't have a presumption of innocence, and you don't have to even be found guilty. You don't even have to be charged. We can just say your property violated a rule and we can steal your property. This is how absurd it's all become. And now they're going to take it to another level of artificiality by saying these rules are going to be created by AI. And we've got to get as many of them out as possible. We've got to flood the zone with this stuff. You noted the enthusiasm for the Department of Transportation's AI. Trump is very excited about this initiative, said the guys who were doing this presentation that ProPublica got the information on. Six DOT workers contacted ProPublica anonymously. They were very upset about this. And of course, look, their jobs are on the line. Who needs them, right? They're going to let AI write the rules. They said the typical regulation writing can take months, sometimes years, due to complications involved. But at the demonstration in December, a presenter told them that Google's Gemini could cut that down to minutes or even seconds. Think about the explosion of rules that we're going to get. I mean, talking about tripwires that are going to send you to jail or take everything that you got. This is a prescription for nightmare. So again, it takes longer than months or years. When Congress does it, they send it to the bureaucracy and they can do it a little bit faster than that. Now we're going to do it in minutes or seconds. Imagine how the Federal Registry is going to explode with that kind of an attitude. And that's the attitude coming from the top.
Do a variation of the Schoolhouse Rock. How does a bill become law? Well, the AI just decides. How does a bill become law? You just see the text scrolling.
Yeah, that's right. It's a prompt. We prompt it. That's what I've said for a long time. We need to redo that. You know, I'm a bill on Capitol Hill, and I think we need to redo that to show how it's really done with bureaucracies. And now even that idea is outdated, isn't it, Lance?
They can use AI to demonstrate how they're going to use AI, too.
The DOT's former chief AI officer, Mike Horton, compared the plan to, quote, having a high school intern that's doing your rulemaking. Well, they don't care. The intention is to flood the zone with rules and tripwires to get you in trouble. Who else is going to have to rewrite what they're doing is Harvey Silverglate has three felonies a day. So it's going to go up 300 a day, probably.
So we have all the stories of the AI attorneys making up case law. Now they can just make it up and make it legal.
Mm-hmm.
We found the perfect solution.
That's right. So now they're going to be hallucinating regulations for us. Wake me up from this nightmare. Gemini has been linked to another number of embarrassing episodes, like hallucinating marriages that don't exist or making up dangerous medical information. So now we're going to put them in charge of autonomous killing machines, and we're going to put them in charge of autonomous rulemaking, which I guess is kind of the same thing, regulations that kill us in every way imaginable. Speaking of that, we have Waymo's school bus situation just got a lot worse. By the way, thank you, Spencer DeLong. Thank you for the gift of the sub on Kick. He says, David and Lance, I am a CNC machinist in Ohio. I work with pumps now, but primarily the auto industry, and I worked for John Deere in the past. The most dangerous part of the legislation is the aftermarket car parts. Limiting 3D printers and CNC machines sets the precedent that will eventually restrict the manufacture of auto parts. They'll make repairing older and likely paid-off cars even more difficult, especially once parts are discontinued by the OEM. You'll own nothing and be happy. Well, that's a very important aspect of this as well. Thank you for pointing that out, Spencer. Yeah, you look at Jay Leno and all the old car parts that he's got. He's been making his own car parts with CNC and 3D printers and stuff like that for a very long time because you can't get them anywhere. You know, he's got a car that's 60 years old, some of them older than that. There's nobody making those car parts out there, but probably somebody is going to own the copyright, and they will make sure they keep extending these copyrights and these patents. They'll make sure that you can't print it, even though they don't want to do it. And the government will make sure of that as well. So that's the key thing. That's the way that you're going to be able to keep your cars going. They want to shut that down as well. Speech, self-defense, and mobility. Those are the things that they're going for. And you stop and think about it. Does this look like a war? What do you do with a war? First of all, you take down the communications, you go after the speech, right? You want to isolate the enemy, and then you come after their food supply, you come after their mobility. So you take down their communications, you restrict their mobility, you take away their food. I think they're at war with us. Well, the school bus situation with Waymo, they said they've had a lot of situations, especially in Austin, but it's also been in Georgia as well, where they've rolled out their cars. There's a probe that makes the NTSB the second regulator to investigate Waymo and the behavior of its robo-taxis around school buses, after the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration launched its own probe last October. At least six were reported in Atlanta, Georgia, as well as Waymo's ignore the bus's flashing lights and the extended stop arm. This is the kind of thing that would be major penalties for human drivers. But, of course, they're going to look the other way because this is a robo-taxi. You know, we don't really care about the lives of children so much if it's Google that's threatening them. No serious collisions or injuries have been reported yet, but in at least one incident, a Waymo drove right by the students who were disembarking from the bus. In December, Waymo issued a voluntary software recall for over 3,000 of its fifth-generation vehicles to address the same issue. In Austin, in Austin, school districts claim at least one violation after the patch had been applied, suggesting it didn't work. So when you look at the comical things that Waymo has been involved in, comical failures, they've been spotted driving on the wrong side of the road, getting stuck in a roundabout, blowing through police standoffs, driving on light rail tracks as if it was a rail car. It's also stoked intense community backlash when in one particular area killed a beloved bodega cat. They always mention that one. But the company's biggest snafu came last month when seemingly the entire San Francisco fleet suddenly forgot how to drive after the city experienced a power outage, causing the cars to stop in the middle of the roads and to clog up busy intersections. That's exactly right. Well, you know, when you talk about the automobile stuff and where this is all headed, I think that is a huge part of it. They have tried to control the aftermarket for a lot of different things through California's, what is it? It's the CARB regulation is what they call it, and California Air Resources Board. And so I know when I was doing aftermarket modifications to the Miata, there were a lot of things, even though the people that were making this stuff for the most part were in California, where there was used to be a vibrant car culture. Now CARB was shutting it down and said, we can't sell this to anybody if you live in California. We can only do it mail order, that type of thing. And so you better believe that states like Washington State, New York, and California are going to use those 3D printer restrictions to keep you from getting car parts, just like Spencer said. What was the name of the bill? Let me get that name of the bill. I should have mentioned that before. Hang on just 1 second.
It is House Bill 2321.
Okay, good. That's very good. Yeah, House Bill 2321 in Washington State. Introduced in January, just introduced this year. And they're going to kick these things in, they say, by July 1st, 2027. I don't know that 3D printers could, manufacturers could make these changes that quickly. So just stop them from being sold completely, I guess.
I mentioned Bamboo Labs. They already kind of have a system set up where you upload your files to their server and then it goes to your printer. But you can actually use LAN only. They had something where they switched to that and everyone got really annoyed, but they specified, no, don't worry, we're not taking away LAN only yet, but this would require them to remove the LAN only option.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. Well, Cuda Bing says, I would throw so much money at a semi-automatic crossbow.
That I put that up because that kind of exists. There's the sliding instant legless bow by Jorg Sprav. You can look that up.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, look at that. Look that up on YouTube. That's they kind of got that out there already. I don't know if he's selling it or not, but
yeah, anyway. He is.
Oh, he is. Okay, be my Valentine, little boys that chew their toast into the shape of a gun, subject to arrest. That's right. Well, we've had situations where they did that. They came after some kids because they ate their toast in the shape of a gun or the crackers or something like that. I wonder how long it's going to be before they start arresting kids who go pew pew with a finger. I imagine they've already done that in some school districts as well. Those schools should be given the finger if anybody deserves it. Okay, we'll be right back, folks.
defending the American dream. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
All right, welcome back. And I said at the beginning of the show that there's some very interesting connections that are found in the Epstein files, because he's embedded in this network of elite criminals that are not only pedophiles, but they've been working as to how they are going to reorganize and reset society. And he was embedded in right in the center of these people. And so there's some interesting information about how he was embedded in the pandemic planning, as well as in the planning and facilitation of Bitcoin as well, that's come out of these files. Sayer G, who is someone who spends a lot of time talking about alternatives to the Rockefeller medicine system, said, buried inside these documents is some very amazing information, a blueprint for the 20-year financial architecture that was designed to turn pandemics into a profit center. Offshore vaccine funds, pandemic reinsurance triggers, donor-advised fund structures designed to profit under the cover of charity, simulation programs, career pipelines into pharma and into the World Economic Forum. All this was built years before COVID-19. All of it was running through Gates, J.P. Morgan, and Epstein. And, of course, Epstein was at the epicenter of a lot of these criminal banking industries, the Rothschilds, the Goldman Sachs people. He's got an attorney at Goldman Sachs. Her name was Rumler, and she was getting gifts from Jeffrey Epstein, like, I think it's like a $9,000-$10,000 handbag and a $1,200 Apple Watch, because it had some particular designer redesign, you know, some brand name designer that for the handbag as well as the Apple Watch. Don't envy these rich people. They're so stupid they spend $10,000 on handbags. What is it? Must be a really good handbag. But you can now get them for only like $5,000. They depreciate pretty quickly, evidently. So this is how, of course, Melania does the same type of thing. In August of 2011, Jeffrey Epstein emailed Mary Erdos, the CEO of J.P. Morgan's $2 trillion asset management division, outlining a Gates-linked donor-advised fund. He said, we should be ready with an offshore arm, especially for vaccines. And, of course, they weren't concerned at J.P. Morgan about doing business with a convicted pedophile at all. That didn't bother them. And he's got a shot of the email there. So he said, we need to have an offshore arm, especially for vaccines. And he said, the tension is making money from a charitable organization. Therefore, the money-making parts need to be at arm's length. And, of course, this is the thing. You know, Bill Gates always bristles at the fact that people say he's doing this stuff to make money. He says, I've got a charitable organization. I'm donating this stuff to it. Well, right here you see in these emails going back and forth between these banks and between Bill Gates, how do we make money out of this charitable organization? We've got to structure this carefully so that it can be, this charitable organization can be a profit center for us. So the architecture, the structure, the architect of it is a convicted sex crime pedophile, explicitly acknowledging that the vehicle is designed to generate profit under the legal cover of being a charity, which is what people have said all along about Bill Gates. Here it is in the emails. Boris Nikolic, Bill Gates' chief science technology advisor, emailed Epstein and Gates about the donor-advised funds and writes, it might be a great path forward for some key areas like energy and pandemic, etc. Now, again, remember, these are things that Bill Gates puts himself out as a altruistic philanthropist, right? I'm just doing this to help people. I said this from the very beginning about the green grift that is out there. This is really has been a play on making money out of alternative forms of energy, basically mandating them. You know, the renewable energy mandates of solar and wind and other things like that. And they've got a lot of different ways that they can make money out of the energy stuff. And, of course, the pandemic was the same thing. He points out they're not talking about this as being a response to an emergency. This is a strategy for an investment portfolio. That's the key thing. And he goes on in the email. He says, join Swiss RE, which is a reinsurance team. He said, we did one for pandemics. It helped to develop pandemic triggers. Parametric triggers. A parametric trigger is a financial instrument for automatically paying out when a pandemic is declared. It was developed by somebody in Epstein's career placement network. 6 months later, the World Bank issued its first ever pandemic catastrophe bonds. And guess who issued them? The same bank that Jeffrey Epstein was recommending, Swiss RE, with exactly these triggers. And coronavirus was listed as a peril that they would be doing pandemic bonds for. So these people basically make money. It's kind of like, what is that prediction market that everybody's betting things on? But, Wall Street is a casino. And just like you've got bookies who will take bets on anything, that's what they're doing with these bonds. They're basically taking bets on anything. So they set this thing up, used exactly the same people, the same mechanism that had been designed by the people that were working with Jeffrey Epstein. Yes? Did you say something? Oh, okay. An agreement letter that was addressed to Gates states that Gates specifically requested that Jeffrey Epstein, quote, personally serve as a representative of Boris Nikolic, who is Bill Gates' chief science and technology advisor. So Gates had access to every law firm, every advisor, every institution on earth, but he chose Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted sex offender. And of course, we know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And Melinda Gates was asked about the aspect of the report that came out of some of these emails in terms of Bill Gates having apparently contracted a sexually transmitted disease and how he was asking for help as to how he could slip a Mickey to his wife, so she, an antibiotic, basically, so she wouldn't know. And Melinda Gates had this to say.
The emails in the files suggest that Bill Gates had additional affairs and that he tried to get medication to treat a sexually transmitted infection and that he was going to give you the medicine without you knowing. His representative has said all of this is false. It is not on you to have to respond to the details of that alleged behavior, but I wonder what your dominant emotion is when you read these news articles with these details.
Sad. Just unbelievable sadness. Unbelievable sadness, right? And again, I'm able to take my own sadness and look at those young girls and say, my God, how did that happen to those girls, right? And so for me, it's just sadness. Sadness for, I wanted to leave my marriage. I had to leave the, I felt I needed to eventually leave the foundation. So it's just sad. That's the truth, right? And it's kind of like, at least for me, I've been able to move on in life.
Yeah, the foundation that helped to make her so rich because they were using it as a profit center. And so how do I feel about all this pandemic stuff that they did? Well, I feel like her. I feel sad. It was a giant rape of society, folks, and murder. It was a snuff film, this pandemic simulation stuff. Pandemic simulation, vaccine, gatekeeping, and sexually transmitted disease. Gates and Epstein ties. Was Gates leveraging Epstein's shadowy network for global health dominance? This is from RT, by the way. The disclosures warrant answers from the multibillionaire Microsoft co-founder turned quote-unquote philanthropist, whose foundation wields outsized influence on worldwide vaccination and data systems. His role in global vaccine distribution was amplified by accusations from the CEO of Russia's direct investment fund. This guy, Kirill Dmitriev, is very upset that Gates cut out the Russian vaccines because, this is all just about money, right? This isn't, that's all. So they're worried that they get cut out of this thing. Dmitriev's accusations against Gates echo broader criticisms of Gavi, the global vaccine alliance that Gates granted $750 million to in 2000. Gavi claims that it pools funds from governments, philanthropists, and industry to buy and to distribute vaccines to low-income countries. Detractors argue that it's dominated by the Gates Foundation, which Melinda Gates was a part of at that time, its largest private donor, and that it prioritizes selling expensive new vaccines instead of actually providing health care. So that's one way that you can monetize this, right? You create this fund, this charitable fund, this philanthropic fund, and they're going to give vaccines to people, and people can donate to them, and they're going to buy the for-profit vaccines that are out there. Department of Justice files also show Gates discussing polio eradication in Pakistan and Afghanistan with input from Epstein. The disgraced financier had no health expertise, says RT. Guess what? Neither does Bill Gates. They both were involved, however, in geopolitics and massive financial grifts, because that's what this all was about. And, of course, they were all involved in Event 201, one of the final ones of all these different dark winter germ games that began, first one, 2 months before 9/11. And so Event 201 in 2019, you had World Economic Forum, Bill Gates, Johns Hopkins. Epstein had his finger in that as well. He collaborated with Bill Gates on that simulation that year. And so when you look at all of this, it's not just slipping antibiotics to his wife, Melinda, but he was also purportedly buying Adderall for his bridge tournaments. So this guy who is so motivated to win at a bridge tournament that he's going to take a drug stimulant that's going to help him do that. It's pretty amazing. But getting ready for the next pandemic, this is the World Health Organization, quietly coordinating large-scale simulations. They're simulating it again with 31 different countries. The World Health Organization is quietly coordinating this large-scale pandemic simulation. They're getting ready, they said, for the next pandemic. They're not saying they're getting ready in case of a pandemic. They're saying they're getting ready for the next pandemic. There's going to be a next one. Why? Because we didn't do anything to punish these criminals. They got away with it. Look at Trump. He's one of the worst ones with all this stuff. Nothing happened. And this is being reported by WND, which is one of the biggest cheerleaders of all things Trump. Well, you might want to ask why letting Trump and all these people who are involved in this get away with it. How does that set up the next pandemic? It sets it up even more so than a simulation. So the WHO publicized this exercise on Facebook. They said, we're getting ready for the next pandemic. 31 countries and areas from across the Western Pacific participated in the IHR exercise Crystal to test readiness for the future. The WHO did not describe the drill as preparation for a hypothetical scenario. It repeatedly referred to the readiness for the quote-unquote next pandemic. You think it's over? They're already rehearsing for the sequel because they got away with it. And so while we're on the Jeffrey Epstein stuff, it was kind of interesting that Todd Blanche, as I pointed out, was the personal attorney for Donald Trump, defending him always. And he was the guy who went down and had the extensive interview with Ghislaine Maxwell, and then she was transferred to a club-fed prison. Well, he had an interesting quote. He said, it isn't a crime to party with Mr. Epstein. Really? So I guess it's not a crime to send him emails either. It's not a crime to conspire to set up pandemics and profit from them. It's not a crime to get involved with the conspiracies that they had around Bitcoin and how they could control the different aspects of it. And there's a very interesting article, I hope I have time to get to it today, about that. A lot of people say, well, you know, Bitcoin, it's open source, and you know, you can't hack into it and all this kind of stuff. That's not the way they hack into these things. They hack into things by eliminating other alternatives and by pushing one thing. And they have the financial infrastructure and the surrounding people and organizations to manipulate this stuff. They don't have to actually break into the code. That is absolutely meaningless. That is kind of an engineering perspective of that. You have to take a financial systems perspective of Bitcoin to see where the real criminality is. But anyway, he says it isn't a crime to party with Mr. Epstein, really. Well, I would just say, show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are, right? That's the old phrase that we've always heard, and it's pretty much true. And if you are partying with Jeffrey Epstein, like Donald Trump did for a very long time, if you are working with him, post-conviction even, like Steve Bannon, on how to do PR to bring back his image, what does that say about you?
Plus, it very much is a crime to do the sort of partying that they were doing with underage girls at the Epstein parties.
That's right.
It's not Epstein that made it illegal. It's the underage girls and everything else.
And when you look at these pictures, like I haven't put these pictures up because they're just absolutely disgusting. Blurred out faces of very, very young girls that he is... got on his lap or various other things like that, like the ones with Prince Andrew. He's got a young girl that he is on. She's laying flat on her back, don't even know because the face is blurred out, don't even know if she's conscious or not. And he's on his hands and knees over her. I mean, it is disgusting what these people are doing. And in light of all that, this should be the final nail in the coffin for Todd Blanche to say something like this. This is his excuse. And of course, it's amazing to see how Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro was saying, just move on. We don't need to talk about this Epstein stuff anymore. We've had enough of that, right?
We can't waste our time on Epstein and other stuff that are going on here that some people want us to focus on.
And Mike Johnson's nodding his head, yes, it's so disturbing, isn't it?
We better focus on who we are, what we're doing, where we want to take the country.
That's what Epstein tells us. It tells us who you are.
Mr. Speaker, God bless.
Tells us who Mike Johnson and Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro are.
Mark, thanks for all you do. God bless.
Yeah. It tells us exactly what they are. Show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are. Mossad, Jeffrey Epstein, Netanyahu. I'll never say no. He says, we will always investigate any evidence of misconduct, but you know, it's not a crime to party with Epstein. So as horrible as it is, it's not a crime to email with Mr. Epstein. Well, no, that's pulling it out and ignoring the content of the emails, ignoring the content of the parties. And Laura Ingraham interrupted to say, that's all that was going on in some of those places? Just a party? If the photos could speak, some of them would look pretty bad, she said. He said, and that's right. And unfortunately, photos can't speak. Well, I think they shout reams. I think they're worth a thousand screams. Trump's name also appears on more than 3,000 times in the files, along with Clinton and others. And he pitched a lot of opportunities in post-coup Ukraine to Rothschild's executives as well. He's at the center of that. How can we profit from that?
And that's how many times his name appears, and we have no idea how many times it's been redacted, as you have in the board. The people's names are being redacted.
That's right. So going back to 2014, right after the CIA coup, again, as I said, you know, the connections of Epstein with the intelligence agencies and all the rest of the stuff, and right after the CIA orchestrated coup in 2014, he starts contacting the Rothschilds, Arian de Rothschild, head of the Swiss private banking firm, Edmond de Rothschild Group, and talking about how they can make money off of Ukraine. He said in a March 2014 email exchange with Rothschilds, he wanted to discuss Ukraine in an upcoming meeting. Epstein's reply said, Ukraine upheaval should provide many opportunities, many. So he emphasized that by putting it there twice. In 2015, after she became the CEO of the Rothschild Group, she negotiated a $25 million contract with Epstein for, quote, risk analysis and the application and use of certain algorithms for the bank. In 2013, he asked for her help in hiring a female personal assistant, whom he said should be multilingual and organized, and especially female, right? So Epstein also put de Rothschild, who married into the Swiss banking family in 1999, put her in touch with Catherine Ruemmler. This is the Goldman Sachs partner that I talked about. And she's the one who's getting the $10,000 purse and the a $2,000 Apple Watch from Jeffrey Epstein. I'm sending over somebody with a bottle of wine and this and that. I mean, he was always sending her gifts. She was something of a female assistant, I guess. But the real issue here, also in terms of Jeffrey Epstein, is this, who really built Bitcoin? This is a thread on Twitter, if you want to find it. We don't have time to talk about all of it today, but it's the Jungle Inc. Crypto News. It was the person who put this out. He says, if you think that Bitcoin was built by cyberpunks in the basement, you haven't read these files. The recent dump of over 3 million pages about Epstein is showing the architecture of capture that is so sophisticated that most people defending Bitcoin don't even realize they're defending the very system they thought they were escaping. This isn't a hit piece on Bitcoin. This is about pattern recognition and how the elite networks capture emerging technologies at their most vulnerable moments. And you'll spend your entire life believing in revolutions that were managed from the very beginning, if you don't understand that. The quote-unquote decentralized future of money was funded, shaped, and guided by one of the most connected sex offenders in modern history, and the exact same legacy power networks that cryptocurrency claimed to disrupt. Not through coded backdoors, but through something that is far more effective: infrastructure bottlenecks. They didn't need a backdoor into the code. All they needed was to be able to control everything around it. He said, you'll hear from people all the time, the code is open source, it can't be controlled. Well, that misses the entire point. Nobody needed to corrupt Bitcoin's coin. They just needed to control everything around it, the infrastructure around it. For example, who could access capital to build on it? Which projects would get listed on which exchanges and so forth? And what the media narratives would say about it, what the regulators went after, which developers got paid, which academic institutions legitimized it. The Epstein network positioned itself at every single one of these bottlenecks. For example, you know, which projects are going to get listed on exchange. He got involved in Coinbase, and they're the ones who can make or break any kind of crypto that is out there. So that type of thing is how they exercise their control. And so he says, they don't do it loudly or obviously. They do it quietly, methodically, through the exact same mechanisms of elite influence that they've used in every other domain. So again, when you look at what these people are doing, yes, you know, the intelligence agencies want to be able to blackmail and control people, but another means of control is going to be the money that's there. But that's why this all pulls together, all this forbidden sex, because that's, pedophilia is one of the few forbidden sex things that exists in Western society anymore. And so they go for that. And that's an instrument of control. So how did Epstein get his money into your so-called decentralized on-ramp? So the records confirm that Epstein invested about $3 million in Coinbase December 2014, and when it was valued at $400 million. So it's less than 1%. But he got a lot of leverage because he knew the people in charge. Fred Ersam, Coinbase co-founder, knew that the money came from Epstein, and they're emailing each other. He says, I've got a gap between noon and 3 p.m. today. Would it be nice to meet if it's convenient? And so he says, so why this matters, it's about a lot more than just the dollar amount, you know, the less than 1%, $3 million into a company that has a $400 million valuation. So they decided which tokens got mainstream legitimacy, which projects could access retail capital, which assets institutions could buy. Coinbase became the regulated gateway between traditional finance and crypto. When Coinbase listed a token, the price was pumped. And when they didn't list a token, projects died in obscurity. A single exchange wielding this much power over a quote-unquote decentralized ecosystem, which it's not, is the very definition of a centralized control point. And at the foundation of that exchange, money and relationships from a convicted sex offender and his network. Not exactly the cyberpunk origin story that they marketed. And so all this warfare was not organic, it was all engineered from the very beginning. There was an email between Austin Hill, of the Blockstream co-founder and CEO, sends an email to Jeffrey Epstein at the MIT Media Lab, says why supporting Ripple and Stellar is bad for the ecosystem that we are building. Hill argues that backing competing blockchain architectures creates irreconcilable strategic and reputational conflicts. These projects threaten our business model. We need them eliminated from the funding pool, he says in the translation. So what happened next? It wasn't a coincidence. Suddenly, the crypto space experienced a coordinated narrative shift. You had alternative blockchains labeled not truly decentralized, or they were called corporate coins or pre-mined scams, regardless of the actual technical merit. So there was a technical dismissal. Then there was an ideological purity test. Bitcoin was sound money, but everything else was a scam. And there was not going to be allowed any nuance. So it's either in or out. And you have these people who are going to be the gatekeepers. They're the close friends of Jeffrey Epstein because he pardoned parties with them, Todd. That's the way these things work. Todd Blanche says that it's not a crime to party with Jeffrey Epstein, but you party with Jeffrey Epstein, he gives you a taste of that forbidden fruit, that dangerous drug, and he also throws in some blackmail there. And now we've got a way to control how people have access to this, to control the narrative to say which things are legit and which things are not legit. Do you see how this works? Do you see how they can take over something that at its core people are focused on, well, can Bitcoin be manipulated and who wrote the code? It's not about who wrote the code. It's about the money and the system that is there. So he says, you also had funding starvation. Projects were identified as threats. They got frozen out of the exact same venture capital networks that were pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into Bitcoin infrastructure. This wasn't grassroots Bitcoin maximalism. This was a deliberate competitive suppression, and it worked. And so when things got difficult for Bitcoin in early 2015, it had its most vulnerable moment, and Jeffrey Epstein was involved in salvaging it as well. That ought to make you suspicious of this whole thing. Well, we don't have time for more of this, but it truly is amazing. And when you combine all of this with the traps that have been set in for the great taking, that is what we're going to talk about tomorrow, the great taking. Have a good day. Thank you for joining us. Happy birthday, Karen.
And if you have any questions for the Ask Me Anything, send them in with AMA in the description for the email.
To our email, davidknightshow@protonmail.com, or put them on Rumble as AMA at the very beginning. Thank you for joining us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.